was an absolute moonshot. But the other one didn't miss by much on a pitch. And if that thing goes in a different direction, if a check swing goes in a different way, then maybe you're looking at an inning that feels a lot different, or a ball game that feels a lot different, and a season ERA that already at 3.33 is even lower than that. And I think, you know, his kind of mentality of, you know, being as hard on himself as he is, and that's one of the things that you really feel when you talk to him, or you really feel when you get a chance to read James's stuff with Garrett Crochet. You really get a sense of how hard Garrett can be on himself and how much he kind of like backs off that a little bit and goes to alter the skill set, not the skill set, but the arsenal, the approach, the attack angles against some of these hitters. It's really cool to see. He holds that high standard for himself so that he can keep that high standard, or so that he can change his approach to keep that high standard. It's impressive. A lot of guys, I guess, the flip side of that coin, are too stubborn to change what got them there, if that makes sense. A lot of guys are unable and don't maybe even have the skill set of manipulating the baseball that Garrett does to be able to kind of alter things in between starts or even during starts some. And it's just kind of crazy to watch happen, and I just really enjoy watching Garrett Crochet starts so far this year. It's been really quite something. To say nothing of the fact that the velocity is there for Crochet. I mean, through more innings than he's ever thrown in his big league career, and he's going to blow away the limits. It's just kind of wild. And I think it was yesterday, day before, where the White Sox beat reporters were kind of asking Pedro about the innings limit of it all, right? The how long can he keep doing this, and we'll all feel confident that his health is being kept under control. And Pedro was pretty clear. There isn't a precedent for this. We talked about this some before the break, right? There is no precedent for this. There's no roadmap to follow. You have to be, as an organization and player, really attuned to what's going on in the moment. Right? We got tests, we got shoulder strength, we got workouts, we got in-between start routines, we got all sorts of high-speed cameras and biometrics and velocity stats that are going to keep him on track and make sure that if he is off track, the White Sox are able to identify both why that's happening and if those sorts of things are leading to or may lead to fatigue that could cause injury, right? All those sorts of things are going to be kept an eye on and monitored the best they can so that they can keep Garrett as healthy as possible. Now, all of that's going to be done. And all that's going to be done to the best of this franchise's ability because, obviously, of how good Garrett is and the prospects he represents. But pitching is still pitching. And as hard as an organization tries to monitor that health, there is no promise of one thing or another. And that's why this is all this season with as many high profile pitchers from Garrett Cole, who is working his way back, to Spencer Strider, who will not this season. It gets scary when it comes to the high velocity, high strikeout pitchers that we've seen go down here over the last, 6 to 8 months. So it's a dicey proposition, no doubt about it. But on the other hand, I really credit the White Sox, Pedro and Garrett Crochet and Chris Getz and Brian Bannister for saying, you know, listen, this season may look a little less than what we want it to look like from a wins and loss perspective. But Garrett, if you're ready to come out there and start, and Lord knows he said he was, then we're happy to have you do it. And we'll keep it, as advanced on terms of getting you there as we possibly can. That's been done, and it's been achieved so far. It's been incredible to watch. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. When we come back at the top of the hour, we're going to hear from White Sox manager Pedro Grifol from last night. A lot of interesting stuff about, obviously, snapping the losing streak, that appeal play over at first base, kind of the mindset of the ball club, and more, I think, on Garrett Crochet, too. Stay with us. We'll play that for you when we come back. I'm Connor McKnight in the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Also, put your socks and sneakers to the test. Join us at Guaranteed Rate Field Saturday, June 22nd, for our annual White Sox 5K presented by Illinois Corn Growers Association. Racers will cross the finish line on field, then can head up to the concourse for a post-race party All net proceeds benefit White Sox charities. Register today at whitesox.com/run. So without further ado, White Sox manager Pedro Grifol after the win against the Red Sox last night.
All righty. Happy day. Don't have to hear about that streak anymore. The boys played well. I thought, you know, we talked about it early. You know, I think Crochet is, you know, developing into a big-time pitcher. You know, these are the guys that, you know, stop streaks like this. And the way he went out there and performed, and what do you have, 10 strikeouts, 6 innings, 3 hits, you know, 2 runs, 1 earned. You know, he did an incredible job. In the fifth inning, you know, he came to me and said, you know, let me go. And of course, I was going to let him go for the 6 for sure. At that point, I thought, you know, he had enough and handed a ball over to Cannon, and I thought Cannon did a great job. You know, we had a couple guys ready, you know, a few times, but, you know, once we scored that extra run, it was his game. It was his game to finish. And, you know, the offense, 3, 4, 5 with homers, you know, took advantage of every single little opportunity, played pretty good defense. Just a really good game all the way around.
I know you talked about Crochet's drive and build before the game, but he really seems like someone who decides he's going to do something and goes out and does it.
That's why when they asked me this morning, you know, I mean this afternoon, if I would have predicted this, I, you know, said what I said. Just because when you have that type of talent and those type of weapons, and you got that will and that drive to do, you know, to really, you know, execute and do something, you do it. You know, and he's got that type of makeup. He's got that type of mindset. He's got that type of makeup, and nobody's going to stop him, you know. And he's going to continue to, you know, to work, you know, to do something that probably 90% of the people in this game thought he couldn't, you know. So it's good for him.
What about the play at first base there? Victor and might have missed the base.
Okay, so what happened on that play was, man, you know what? We saw video on this in spring training. We went over the rule as a group. It was well executed on Boston's part. You know, Alex does a great job in, you know, in these type of situations. We were prepared for it. So when that happened, you know, I went out to the mound and, you know, we went over it, right? We're going to throw the ball to first base. This guy's going to try to steal home plate, and we can't make an attempt on that runner. We make an attempt on the runner, you know, the appeal's over, you know, so we talked about it. Obviously he made an errant throw, but, you know, at the end of the day, this one probably falls on me, because what happened was he made an errant throw, but we still got an opportunity to appeal it. And what happened was I didn't see Vonnie go pick up the ball and come back and appeal it, and Allen, the umpire called him safe. I didn't see it. So once everything was over, I asked, I said, Sean, you know, can we appeal? And he said, you already did. You know, and I'm like, well, you know, I didn't see it. He called him safe. So at that point, I didn't challenge anything because I thought time had elapsed. As it happens, a couple innings later, I go back to, you know, talk to him about, you know, when everything settled down. And I probably had some time, if I would have told him I didn't see the appeal by Vaughn, to challenge the play. So, you know, we knew the rule. We knew what to do. We knew how to execute it. You know, they knew it. You know, and I thought time had elapsed. But I guess I could have asked him, say, hey, I didn't see the appeal. Can we challenge this now? And he said he would have let us. He would let us challenge. So at the end of the day, that was on me.
What was the emotion once the final out was made?
It's just a really good feeling, just to, you know, to break a streak that seems to be the hot topic, and, you know, and just go ahead and let's start something new, you know, and again we'll do everything that we do on a daily basis. We'll watch the game. There's some things that we got to work on, you know, and just get back after it tomorrow. But just to stop the streak, I mean, it's time to move on. You know, let's continue to play baseball. I'm really proud of these guys. This has been a hard couple of weeks, and I mean, you can hear them in there. You know, to them, it's, you know, they're getting after it every day, and I'm proud of these guys for that. They're taking advantage of this opportunity that, you know, we talk about all the time.
What about the bottles on the field? Did you? Is that?
Yeah, there was a few bottles, I guess, you know, that landed on the field. You know, I called Alan Porter over immediately, and, you know, I just want to make sure nobody gets hurt. And, you know, we notified security, and apparently security did an incredible job because it was over. That was it. It was a couple, and it didn't happen anymore. So they, you know, they did what they do. What they do best, so they made sure that doesn't happen again, and we were back to playing.
Vaughn said he thought they might have from the upper deck. You know anything about that?
I really don't know where they came from. I know they landed on the field. Well, one landed, you know, close to me and you know, closer to some fans there. But the most important thing is that as soon as we notified security, they took care of it. You know, and we didn't have any more issues. Our security guys here are really good at what they do, and they, you know, they're always alert. They're always protecting us, and you know, fans are, they're passionate. You know, they want to see us win. Hopefully, they had a good time today.
Keep their confidence to throw Cannon out there in a situation like that.
I talked a little bit about it this afternoon when I was asked about, you know, him coming back up, and I talked about, you know, that the fact that he's fearless, attacks the strike zone, is not afraid of contact. I talked about he's got weapons. You know, he's really good against right-handers, and what was really impressive today was that he used all his pitches against lefties too, and they were effective. And he had a couple big strikeouts. I think he had one on Devers. I think he had another one on Duran, I think. But, you know, those guys have, you know, some left-handed hitters there that he was able to execute on. You know, and that was really encouraging for, you know, for us to see. But I never hesitated to throw him in there. I mean, he pounds the strike zone, and he's fearless.
How much did it help the bullpen that he went 3 innings tonight?
It helps a lot. I did get, you know, I did get Leisure throwing a little bit. I don't think he got completely hot, and I was going to throw Kopech in the ninth inning. You know, and DeJong hit that double. You know, at that point we were up 5, and you know, we let him finish it. But with the new 3-batter minimum, you know, for me at times I look at a safe situation with 4 runs. The last thing you want to do is, you know, the 3 with which wouldn't have affected him because he was already past it. But you know, he once we got that extra run, it was done for me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Pedro. So on the appeal, you just thought Duran missed first base.
No, we knew Duran missed first base.
Okay.
All right, and they did too. All right, so that's why he stole.
The umpire said.
That's why he stole. No. Okay. So he missed first. We knew it. They knew it. That's why he was stealing home, right? And what we can't do there is make a play on the runner, because we're appealing the play, and the appeal gets nullified if you make a play on the runner. So if he takes off and he's safe at home, we can't appeal. So forget the runner, step off and throw the ball to first base, let him score. He's going to be out because he missed first, right? And then that's when everything else happened. You know, the ball was thrown away. At that point, Bonnie went and got it, came back, stepped on the bag. I didn't see him step on the bag, and when he stepped on the bag, Alan said, "No, he didn't. He did step on the bag. He did." I guess that's your question.
Yeah.
But we would have won it. I believe we would have won it on a challenge.
Yeah, challenge.
If I challenged, but once since I didn't see it, and once I told Sean, you know, home plate umpire, I said, "Hey, can we still appeal because we didn't make a play on the runner?" He said, "You already did." And I'm like, "Well, who did?" He said, "Well, Vaughn did, and Alan called him safe." At that point, I thought our challenge was over because it exceeded the 15 seconds. But if I would explain it, I would have explained it to Sean that I didn't see it. He said that he would allow the challenge. So at the end of the day, it's on me.
Manager Pedro Grifol, and that at the end there is probably the most the clearest explanation of what the White Sox were trying to accomplish, what went wrong, and how they could have altered it a little bit after it went wrong for them. But it, It sounds to me like even the umpires got a little bit confused about the order of operations on that play at first base last night after Crochet had thrown the ball away to first base. So, to recap a little bit, Crochet stepped off to throw over to first. And I suppose the issue at hand here is you've got to appeal it first. And once you do, that nullifies whatever's going to happen with Duran at third. He's going to try and steal home. The Red Sox knew it. As soon as Pedro comes out to the mound to talk about what they want to do and that they want to appeal, Pedro knows, the White Sox knows, that the Red Sox know what they're doing. But you do it because you know he missed first base. So you're going to win on appeal. And even if you get the appeal wrong, you're going to win on challenge because the White Sox had that locked down on video. You'd like to get it done on appeal so you don't waste the challenge, right? That's why the appeal is there. In theory, that's why the umpires are paying attention too. And it sounded like while as the ball got away, that constitutes a play, right? Now, the umpires told Pedro, as he said, that Vaughn did appeal by stepping on first base. Problem is, Pedro didn't see him step on first base, as Pedro said, and that constituted a bit of a breakdown in, I suppose, the communication of the play. It's not, you know, actual communication, but, you know, it's the baseball kind of communication. That means, too, that when he comes, so when Duran comes home, that play, that ball, essentially, is live. What was under, I guess, and still is to a certain point under a little bit of confusion is whether or not Pedro was able to, or the White Sox would have been able to challenge that play after Duran comes home. And the answers that Pedro got, I mean, I'll say it for him, he didn't necessarily put it this way. To me, the answers that Pedro got from the umpiring crew last night were fairly confusing and noncommittal on that point, on whether challenging that play would have been allowed, whether that appeal was actually watched and granted. It got a little backward, all of it stemming from the fact that Crochet threw it over and missed the base, and the error leads to a run scoring. Thankfully, I guess two things, thankfully. One is that it's pretty clear the White Sox knew exactly what was going to happen with that play and how that process needed to work out. You don't throw over to first base unless you know that he missed the bag. And he did. I've watched he missed the bag. It's very clear. So you should have had an out there by one way or another. Throw gets away from Vaughn, and that's where the issue kind of stems around. The other piece of the good news there, too, is you won the ball game, right? And I think that's what we were talking about, or at least it's what I was talking about earlier in the show, and what Pedro talked about a little bit here in the post-game press conference, is that for Crochet, especially since the beginning of May, almost no matter what happens, if a thing goes weird, if he loses command of a batter, if he walks a guy or gives up a dinger or has a play in the outfield, get whatever it is, he just keeps on working. And that's such a, I can't overstate how big a quality that is to have in a starting pitcher. How many guys in this league can get rattled. And even the guys who seemingly don't have nights where they do, you know, the ability to kind of rise above that and keep working and keep pitching, even if it is your fault that the ball got away, is enormous. It's so important in terms of being able to continue to grow as a starter in this game. I mean, imagine the other side of this, right? Imagine the other side where that ball gets away. Crochet hangs his head a little bit and skulks around the mound some and picks around in the strike zone and wants to be careful to the next hitter. It's Rob Refsnyder after all, and you know, shoot, he's been hitting really well, had three hits in the last night's game, and he's been playing great defense. You know he's feeling good about himself. So yeah, instead of the single to Refsnyder, you know, you give up a double, perhaps. And then you got Connor Wong, who's, you know, it could spiral on you very quickly. And then instead of six innings and 10 strikeouts, you're looking at a short start from Crochet. Cannon can't finish the whole thing out. He's got to come in for some bulk work, and then you're handing it over the bullpen. All that, and you've got to also assume, or hope, rather, that the offense is doing what they needed to do last night, which they did. The other side, and this is what's so tough, right? You can't, because we didn't see it happen, it's almost tough to imagine that it could have, but it absolutely could have. And the fact that Garrett was the guy working and his teammates around him too, supporting him, was the guy to kind of push that aside and keep it moving. That's really impressive to me. It speaks so clearly to the kind of guy the White Sox heard say in the offseason, I want to be a starter. They said yes, and now you've gotten the results you have out of Garrett Crochet. And the other thing, too, about last night's game, man, I'll tell you what, Jonathan Cannon getting a three-inning save is super cool. When Pedro Grifol in the pregame yesterday was talking about Cannon getting back to the team, Jake Woodford was optioned back to AAA Charlotte after his start the other day against the Red Sox. Cannon came up to take his start. And when I saw the roster move, I assumed that Cannon would just get that next start and that would be the next time we saw him. So when Pedro Grifol was in the dugout yesterday talking to reporters and others in the pregame session and mentioned really clearly that Cannon's up in the bullpen tonight, last night, and available for us, I was a little surprised. And he explained why. You know, obviously, the bullpen's been used quite a bit. They've been through the leverage guys. Cannon's a fresh arm, hoping that he can work multiple innings, whether it be last night or tonight. Obviously, with the three innings last night, Cannon's not going to be available out of the bullpen tonight. But they got what they needed from him. And he got what he needed from the appearance, I think, too. Cannon had been pitching all right down at AAA over the last couple of starts. And I mentioned this in the pregame show yesterday. It is just so difficult to look through a starting pitcher, any pitcher at Charlotte, look through their stats and really trust any one thing because of the run environment, the hitting environment, the absolute bandbox that the Charlotte ballpark is. No fault of anybody's. I guess the architect could probably be taken to task, I suppose, or maybe sea level. We could come after sea level for being so low. Either way, it just is what it is. So Cannon gets up here, kind of thrown into the fire, right? Very little chance to think about it. I got a relief appearance. Throw hard. We saw him flash 97 at points last night. He was well within the strike zone, really pumping the strike zone last night, which was great. And that's his calling card, right? I mean, that's on the scouting report for Cannon. It's why most scouting outlets have his floor as a 4-5 starter. It's because regardless of the kind of stuff he may or may not have at this point in his career, he throws strikes. And if you're throwing strikes in this business with enough movement to keep it off the barrel, you're going to be able to throw a multitude of innings. Question for Cannon is going to be just how much he can work outside the strike zone and get swings and misses, I think, and just how much movement he can kind of employ on any one of his 6-7 pitches that he's got to try and get a true, you know, a whiff offer, something that he can, you know, really strike out hitters with. But last night, being able to trust one guy with three innings, Crochet for six and Cannon for three, man, that really helps to at least hit the soft reset button on your computer, right? Or if we're going back to a Super Nintendo situation, it's the instead of hitting the eject button and launching the cartridge out the thing and doing the heart, you just need to hit the reset button, be a little bit gentler, a little bit kinder to the Super Nintendo. Maybe blow on the cartridge a little bit to get the dust off. Although I read, man, a couple of years ago, I read an article, I think it was an IGN article or something like that, that said blowing in the cartridge does nothing for the restart of the game. And to that I say, nonsense. Absolute nonsense. We all played Ken Griffey baseball on Super Nintendo, or at least if you're old enough like I did, or you had a Super Nintendo, you played Ken Griffey baseball, and you know as well as I do that if that game wasn't loading right or it got stuck in the opening credit scene, all you had to do was pop the thing out, blow on the cartridge in the way that you knew how to do it, slap it back in there, and you were playing baseball in no time. You can't tell me that didn't work. We all learned how to do it. We all understand that it is a foolproof process that should not be impugned. It actually works. That's the soapbox for the afternoon, and we got to hit the break, and it's about time because I'm here on a Super Nintendo Ken Griffey Jr. baseball segment. Either way, 312-332-3776. That's the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, a little bit later in the show, 2 o'clock, we're going to hear from Jesse Rogers, ESPN's baseball insider. And get all things trade deadline coming up with him. Lucas Giolito and Liam Hendricks were at the ballpark, or are at the ballpark right now, in fact, and they spoke to White Sox beat reporters on the first day of the series on Thursday. Some really interesting stuff from both of them, and both, of course, and obviously, fan favorites for a good long while. They spoke in some pretty glowing terms about their memories with the White Sox, the state of the organization, and kind of what they're up to now. I think you'll find it interesting. They're both great guys. You'll hear from them as we go in the next couple of segments on White Sox Weekly. It's the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. You can, let's see, what should we tell you about so far today? Get to the ballpark Wednesday, June 26th. I mean, you should get to the ballpark every chance you get. But on June 26th, it is Mexican Heritage Night presented by Modelo. And celebrate with friends and family as the White Sox take on the Dodgers at 7:10 p.m. The first 10,000 fans, 21 and older, will receive an Aztec-inspired Mexican Heritage jersey. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. I have seen, I believe, the images got released for that Mexican Heritage jersey. It looks awesome, so you should get here and grab yourself one. Be one of the first 10,000 fans, 21 and older, and you can have one, just like I'm probably going to get one because it's awesome. A couple of ball games going on right now. Actually, just one of them, in fact, and that's the one in London. It's the Phillies and the Mets going on right now. It's the London series. I don't know how you feel about this one. I'm glad that baseball is playing games in foreign locations, right? Not just Canada, but, you know, London and the Mexico series like we've seen. And I believe they got some others scheduled for other places as well. I like expanding the game and all that other kind of stuff. I guess from a selfish point of view, I don't get to watch those games because, I mean, today I'm here doing White Sox Weekly and talk with you all. But I would imagine that this is a big thing for those living abroad who have gotten themselves into baseball. I've seen a couple of stories tweeted by, you know, national reporters of English citizens, British citizens who have found their way into baseball one way or another and have really, you know, kind of, I guess, been supportive of the teams that have come over there or just kind of chosen to be, you know, Cardinals fans or Yankees fans or Phillies fans or Mets fans or whatever, because they're the teams that have made their way over there. I wouldn't be surprised at all if the White Sox are a team that heads to London at some point in the next couple of years, being the one of the founding franchises of the American League, that whole thing. I think that kind of that logo plays well, too. I mean, shoot, you go to my wife asked me this morning, we were taking our daughter for a walk. We were seeing a lot of White Sox hats all around the neighborhood. And she said, you know, it's a lot of White Sox hats today. Do you see a lot of them? And I said, well, yeah, of course we see a lot of White Sox hats. They're incredibly popular. Every airport you go to, you're going to see somebody in a White Sox hat wearing it because of the fashion statement that it was. I mean, the White Sox put a documentary out about that hat and what it meant to hip-hop culture back in the early 90s with Dre and everybody. I mean, it was a big deal. And that hat's so cool. That travels over the pond, too, I think. Phillies lead the Mets 6-1. Top of the fifth. And I don't know if you are an Always Sunny in Philadelphia fan like I am, but Rob McElhenney, who was one of the characters on that show and a Phillies fan, he and the Phillies did a promotional bit. McElhenney is also part of one half of the ownership for the Wrexham FC, the Wrexham Football Club. It's a popular documentary on Hulu, I think. He and, what's the handsome guy's name, right? The Ryan Reynolds. Thank you, Ryan Reynolds. The two actors, they own the club. They've brought it back up from nothing. And I guess it's a pretty good football club at this point. I think they got moved up a league and did not fare well in that move up, but are still they got moved themselves up a league and the whole thing. Very popular, those two guys over in England right now because of that. McElhenney grew up a Philly fan because he's from Philly. The character Mac in the show is from Philly, and he had an obsession with Chase Utley when he was a young boy. And I'll save you some of the sordid details, but he wrote letters to Chase Utley looking at him as a father figure and wanted to have a catch and kind of ended up like stalking Chase Utley for a little while. It was a light stalking, humorous. And he, in the promos for this series with the Phillies and the Mets, in the promos for the series, he ends up writing letters to Bryce Harper instead of Chase Utley. And Bryce calls Chase Utley about the letters, asking, like, what's going on here? Is this guy weird? Is this guy crazy? And Chase Utley finds out about it and gets upset that Mac is kind of cheating on him with Bryce Harper. And this is all the promo of it. I don't know if you've seen them. If you're an Always Sunny fan, you should. Even if you're not, they're pretty funny, but they're the promo videos that MLB had kind of shot for the Phillies and Mets series out in London. That's the best thing I've seen about that series so far. And right now, the Phillies, Mac's team, they're up 6-1 on the Mets. Phillies are 44-19 this season. My goodness, have they gotten off to a terrific start. And then the Mets are 27-35. and trade rumors surround them as much as maybe any other team, with Pete Alonso, a pending free agent after this season, and a whole bunch of squads around Major League Baseball would love to trade for a power source at first base like Pete Alonso, even if he is going to be a free agent and probably go get a gigantic deal at some point in the offseason. 312-332-3776, that's the phone number. We'll get to some of the latest or some of the stuff from Liam Hendricks and Lucas Giolito in just a little bit. But in Oak Lawn, it's Steve on the phone. What's up, Steve? Welcome to White Sox Weekly.
Thanks a lot, Connor, and hope you're having a great day. I'm just baffled by our manager, Pedro Grifol. His description. Okay, he says he didn't watch Vaughn touch first base. What was he looking at? You follow the play. Did anybody ask him how he missed Vaughn touching first base?
Well, then, not that I recall, but if you remember that the throw gets away and the play
correct.
Then becomes Duran coming home. I mean, umpires.
In fact, it's even more proof of his ineptitude, because the reality is the ball got away. We all saw that.
Right.
Vaughn goes over and still touches first base. He did not make a play on the runner.
No, okay. I'm not saying Vaughn made a play on the run. Pedro himself said that was his mistake, that he missed that.
Right.
And he wore that as much as anybody last night.
And that's my whole point, is even in his defense, and he says he's wrong, he doesn't belong in a dugout. On top of it, it layers even deeper, because he has a conversation with the ump. He doesn't use the right terminology. He's talking about the appeal, okay? And then he doesn't use the right term to say, may I still challenge? And he doesn't do that by his own admission until later in the game. At that point,
I don't know what you mean by, I'm not sure, Steve, I'm not sure what you're referencing in terms of using the wrong terminology.
Because he wanted to challenge, he had the right then to challenge the play on the umpire that he missed first base.
Correct.
The runner missed first. He used the term appeal, and the umpire replied to his request, you already appealed, because he said he wanted to appeal. No, he wanted a replay challenge at that point.
No, I understand the frustration with the play not being executed and Pedro missing that and Garrett throwing far too hard over to first on an appeal play and it not going right. I get that. However, if I remember correctly, and I've listened to it twice so far, and it's entirely possible I missed it. It's a confusing thing. I'm pretty sure Pedro asked, can I challenge? And the umpire said, you already appealed. There's some confusion there from the umpiring crew to Pedro that I think probably should have been more clear in the moment. And I wouldn't be too surprised if we get some clarity on here over the next, I don't know, call it 12, 24 hours. You understand? You know what I mean?
Connor, he said he asked if he could appeal, and the umpire said, you've already appealed. He did not use the term challenge. I listened to this last night. I saw it. I listened to you replaying it. And thank you, by the way, for replaying it. Okay, that was very good of you.
No doubt.
And why I enjoy your show. But listen again. He does not use the term challenge, and that's what he should have been doing.
All right, Steve, appreciate it, man. We'll listen to it. I mean, we're not going to play it again, obviously, because the show must go on, as it were. I'll listen to it again during the break and see if I can parse through it. That is not what I remember hearing. It's entirely possible. Steve, we have Steve on the show a lot. He's a smart, bright dude. That play did not go the way the White Sox wanted it to go. It's one that, you know, you heard Pedro talk about it. They'd run a couple of times in spring training and knew exactly how they wanted to get it done, and they didn't start it right, that's for sure. And the chaos that ensued certainly didn't help them correct it much. I'm telling you what I know from, and I hope you can kind of read between the lines here. I wouldn't be too surprised if there's some clarity coming from umpires at some point on this about how things got communicated last night, too. 312-332 3776. That's the phone number. We're going to slide to a quick break here to try and get us back on time a little bit. That's my fault more than anything else. I want to get to some of the sound from Liam Hendricks and Lucas Giolito as well. Both of them talked over the last 2 days here at Guaranteed Rate Field. Former White Sox, much beloved. They got the scoreboard video and everything. And both of them had some interesting stuff to say about their time with the White Sox, some pretty frank admissions about what did and didn't go on here, and just two good guys and fan favorites that I think you might want to hear from if you haven't heard it already this weekend. You got White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Let's go.
Enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to attend Chicago's hottest summer events. June's winner will get two field pass tickets to the Jordan Davis postgame concert presented by Coca-Cola on June 28th, plus two tickets to Lollapalooza, Riot Fest, and Chicago's NASCAR weekend. My goodness. Two tickets to Lollapalooza, Riot Fest, and Chicago's NASCAR weekend, plus the Jordan Davis postgame concert? That's a pretty great deal. To enter, visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. That's whitesox.com/sweepstakes. White Sox and Red Sox coming up here at Guaranteed Rate Field. A 3:10 first pitch, 2:30 pregame show. Jesse Rogers joins us at 2 o'clock, and we have some sound for you. Liam Hendricks and Lucas Giolito, both members of the Red Sox right now, were gracious enough to spend some time talking with White Sox beat reporters in the Red Sox dugout prior to Thursday's game, a 14-2 win for the Red Sox over the White Sox. Liam is, in fact, on field right now and has been pretty much all weekend talking to those who are involved with the various charities that he's been supportive of and a leader in helping young adults with cancer. As he went through those treatments himself. And I think we talked with Nicky Lopez about this, too, when we talked to him about his 16-inch softball charity tournament that's coming up here next month. And I happen to know this from some personal experience. That age group, that like 14 to 26-ish age group of patients who are dealing with cancer and radiation and chemotherapy are often the most underserved when it comes to organizations that can help you through that treatment in terms of community, in terms of support, in terms of finding doctors, places to live when you have to go for your treatment in these particular places. You know, maybe you go to Houston where they've got a terrific array of doctors and hospitals and something like that that's you know, basically a city devoted to helping cancer patients and treating cancer. There aren't a whole lot of support groups for that age group. For younger kids, obviously, you've got your parents, your family, and a lot of organizations, great organizations that help specifically young kids, pediatric age kids with cancer. And obviously, as you get older, you are, you know, an adult with healthcare and insurance and all this other kind of stuff, and it's a bit more on your own, but there are all sorts of organizations there. That kind of 14 to 26-year-old age group is one that is underserved when it comes to charitable organizations that are dedicated to the support of and help of or help to those particular patients. And that's what Liam is focused on with his charitable organizations. That's what Nicky Lopez is focused himself on with those charitable organizations. And I know for a fact that that's well and truly appreciated by patients of that age group who are dealing with that disease. So to that end, Liam's back here just as involved as it seems like he's ever been with those endeavors. And he's gotten himself, you know, the Red Sox obviously have with the Jimmy Fund, a long, long standing tradition of supporting cancer patients at their own ballpark and in their own city. But Liam talked a lot about the baseball side of things, the non-baseball side of things when he spoke with reporters yesterday. We've got a couple of chunks for you here to kind of play through it, and I'll walk us through some of this audio. And it's as frank as Liam Hendricks, you know, kind of always is. He was asked up front whether or not he was surprised that the White Sox did not bring him back on that final option for this season.
No. I mean, obviously, the option was there. It was like it didn't make much sense with me only being back for 2 months and then it not being anything else. I feel like I would have been somewhat of an asset as far as a veteran guy in the clubhouse. But in saying that, I played with Getz and maybe didn't want that power struggle. I don't know. Actually, I ran into Getz on the way in when I was saying hello to the front gate stuff. But yeah, look, it wasn't a surprising thing to me. It was I was still hopeful, but look, it is what it is now, and I've landed in a great situation over here with Boston, and it's fantastic, and now I get a chance to be around Giolito again, which is never any good. And then, yeah, it's been great, though. It's been awesome. It's a good group of guys. Love working under AC, and now being a kind of veteran, now being able to hang out with both Kimbrell and Jansen, which is something pretty cool to be a part of in someone's career.
Liam was also asked about his journey, right? His comeback from cancer. Gosh, you think back to that night where he made his debut after clearing cancer and pitching here at Guaranteed Rate Field, the light show, the fans, the everything. I mean, the standout memory of last season, no doubt about it. I will not forget that for quite some time. He was asked whether his journey has changed him as a person or as a player.
Not really. I mean, I probably joke around a little bit more now than I did, which is hard to do because that's all I did. But it's not that. I think I value being able to help the next person a little bit more. And as I said, we've got four meet and greets here today with either survivors or people going through cancer treatments. And I think I take a lot more onus of doing that and not just being the prototypical meet and greet where you come out, you spend 5 minutes, you leave. Like, I want to spend as much time as I can with these people and help them in any which way so that they can go on and help the next person. And it's given me a little bit more purpose as far as the philanthropical side of things that we've been doing with cancer research and also helping young adult cancer patients. There's a room at the Dana-Farber Institute in Boston that was helped with the Jimmy Fund through the Red Sox. That is just a specific room just for young adults who are going through cancer treatments. Just a way to connect with other people because you tend to get left out a little bit as far as a young adult, and you don't know who to talk to, you don't know anything like that. So I think to have people going through similar situations has been a lifesaver for a lot of kids.
Are you in contact with any of the people you had these meet and greets from last year when you were with the...
A little bit. Like, I think we've got a couple repeat customers coming out again, so it's going to be a good chance to see them. And I try and keep in touch with everybody as much as we can, and if they need anything, get them back out to a game or anything we can. And it's nice to be able to talk to people about their situations and what their side effects were and all the little things and try to take the stigma away from the words cancer, chemotherapy, and radiation.
That's work that Liam and his wife, Christy, have really dedicated themselves to over the last 2 years. And it's impressive. I mean, it just is. It's impressive. He was also asked about just kind of the tough feelings that's been for White Sox fans and White Sox players over the last two seasons. And Liam, in his, characteristic candor, kind of admitted to it and talked about what it was like to mostly just to be here last season as much as he could be.
It was harder as a White Sox player last year. It was not a fun experience to be around, and it was not a great kind of situation to be a part of. But it's one of those bits where you need to try and grind and you need to get better and you need to try and put things on the thing, and the only thing you can do is come in and be your normal self. I think that's when you're going through trying times like the last couple of years, you tend to put a little bit too much onus on that every single win is important. You try and put a little bit too much pressure on yourself in that regard, whereas if you just be yourself and take every day as it comes, it tends to get a little bit better, and it's a learning curve for everybody involved.
When you talk to guys from this year's team, what do they say about it? They had such a bad start to this year, and it really hasn't picked up too much.
Yeah, I mean, it's so far, it's like, look, the vibes in there are great. It's unfortunately, the wins aren't exactly coming as expected, but it's a better clubhouse to be around than it was last year. And that's the first step. You got to get good people around. You got to get the right kind of mentality coming in, and everything will grow from there. But it's unfortunate the way the kind of the win-loss column has been going. But in saying that, you're probably in a lot more games in April than it shows on the record. There was a lot of close games. There was a lot of games that were late losses or anything like that. So it's I think the record doesn't show how close you guys have been as far as a lot of those games. And that's it sucks, but it's part of the game.
Again, this is Liam Hendricks speaking prior to Thursday's ball game. One more here. He was asked how he looks back on his time as a White Sox.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel because, like, that's now the A's and the White Sox, as soon as I've left, have just kind of struggled a little bit. I don't know if it's me leaving or... No, it's... Obviously I signed with the intention of it being a long-term window of contention, and it didn't quite come to that way. And it's unfortunate because you got to take it on the chin. You got to realize that, like, I was part of that. It wasn't just it was that united group, and we failed. We failed the city. We failed the front office. We failed everyone around. We failed the fan base. And that's the tough pill to swallow, but you have to understand that, look, it's part and parcel of the way things go, unfortunately. And now you got to pick yourself up, dust off, and get back after it. And hopefully, it's hopefully the White Sox can get back to a window of contention here shortly. Give it a couple years, and I'm sure the guys that are coming up, they get the trades they've made and hopefully make an impact to the big league club, and we can and they can get back out there. As you can tell, I keep saying we. But, yeah, it was obviously a big part of my career and my life. I lived out here for 3 years, and we loved every minute of it, and it was sad to go, but unfortunately for me, it was just time to move on, and I said, lucky I've landed in a great situation under the tutelage of Alex Cora, and I can't wait to be a part of it once I actually get back on the mound.
It's former White Sox closer Liam Hendricks, now with the Red Sox, and the prognosis for that rehabilitation from Tommy John surgery puts him back at some point in August, though it's Liam Hendricks, so I wouldn't be surprised if he's trying to pitch earlier than that. We'll take a quick break when we come back here from old friend Lucas Giolito as well. White Sox play the Red Sox today at 3:10. It's the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. Got a ball game coming up here in just a little bit. 3:10 pitch for the White Sox and Red Sox. It'll be Nick Nastrini for the White Sox and Brian Bello for the Red Sox. More on starting pitching, or at least more from a starting pitcher. Lucas Giolito was a White Sox starting pitcher for quite some time, threw the no-hitter, the whole thing. I mean, a fan favorite to be sure. And a guy that I really liked, enjoyed talking with. He spoke with White Sox beat reporters in the dugout, prior to Thursday's game. We already heard from Liam Hendricks, now from Lucas. White Sox reporters asked him what it was like watching the White Sox from afar.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, part of me is always going to like root for the team just because I was here for so long. So, you know, it's tough to see like the record and everything like that. But at the same time, like it's kind of like it's a process of, I don't know if they're labeling it a rebuild. I don't know what they're saying. It's just that kind of situation. You have to go through, you know, that low period to start to like chisel away and figure things out. And, you know, that's the one, like, I guess, regret or thing that I think back on our time is we went through that period and then we had that window where we could have really done something special. And we just didn't capitalize on it. So, you know, that's always something to look back and be like, damn, you know, I wish we could have done that.
So Lucas also spoke a little bit about how, you know, just how weird last year was for him. Obviously traded to the Angels and then headed to the Guardians real quickly there after the Angels cut bait on everybody that they'd picked up. Here's Lucas on that.
I felt like it was such a short experience. It's like hard to draw too much from it. I'm not really sure. I don't know if I feel like I definitely learned in that period of time kind of what it takes to be a leader. Like, you need to have leaders. And so that's definitely something that I took from that experience moving forward. And I'm going to have to keep working on. You know, I'm on the shelf this year. It's hard to be a leader when you're not out there competing. You've got to be competing with the guys for sure.
He was also asked about some old friends, too. Obviously, he'd been with Michael Kopech as a teammate for quite some time. And Bruce Levine of The Score asked whether or not he's got Kopech as a guy that can be a top-tier closer.
I believe so. I'm not totally sure how he's doing right now. But, you know, I've seen the, like, he's got the 100 and he's got that nasty stuff. It's just a matter of... I think just going out and getting that consistency going, that's what I'm always searching for as a starter, you know? Like, that's the one thing I'd always tell you guys. It's like, man, I just want to get more consistent. You have to have that consistency, especially in a role like the closer role. You know, that's a big one. So, and I'm sure Liam can speak on that more than I can. But, you know, I think that Michael has a bright future with that for sure.
Last one, and this is more about some old friends of his. He was tight with Garrett Crochet while here, and, you know, I'd kind of forgotten this until we got into the dugout there. Giolito came up with the Nationals. So did Eric Fetty. So they go way back in terms of some minor league stuff. Now, Fetty made his major league debut before Lucas did, but still, he knows them both, and he talked about having watched them both be just great this year.
I'm so pumped for Garrett because he always wanted to be a starter, and like everyone's like, oh, I don't know, you know, all the question marks, whatever, he's like, put that to bed. It's awesome to see. You know, with his frame and his stuff, like, yeah, it's starter stuff. To go out and be saying it for, he's been saying it for years, like, I want to be a starter, I'm going to be a starter. And now he's going out and proving he's a top-of-the-line guy. Like, I'm so pumped for him. Fetty, we go way back, you know, Washington Nationals days, and to see, like, you know, the first stage of his career, not experiencing the success that, you know, he wanted and thought he could have, going over to Korea, retooling, winning, like, the MVP over there, and now coming back kind of with that chip on his shoulder, like, no, I'm that guy. It's fantastic to see. I'm pumped for both of those guys kind of leading the rotation over here, and, you know, I'm following along. It's good to see both, like, really away from baseball, really good people doing it. It makes it even better.
That's former White Sox starter and current Red Sox starter who is on the injured list recovering from Tommy John, Lucas Giolito. We'll pause it here 10 seconds and then let you know what we've got next on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Next up, we'll hear from ESPN's baseball insider Jesse Rogers. We'll talk about the trade deadline. Yeah, it's June 8th, but we've already got rumors swirling all over the place, and Jesse's just the guy to talk to when we come back on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Learn from the pros this summer at a White Sox summer camp presented by Wintrust, starting at $165. Kids ages 5 through 12 can register for a 4-day baseball camp offered at over 35 locations throughout the Chicagoland area. To learn more, visit whitesox.com/play. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. We're going to learn from a pro in our own way here on the show. Your friend and mine, Jesse Rogers, joins us on White Sox Weekly. Jesse, thanks so much for hanging out for a little while today. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Connor. Hope you're doing well as well, especially after a win last night. That was nice.
Much better than the alternative. It was nice to shake off that 14-game losing streak. And my goodness, Garrett Crochet just keeps on astounding with what he's able to accomplish. I want to talk with you about, you know, where the league is at as it regards July 30th's trade deadline. It seems to me that there are, it seems like there's more shaking this year right now than in some years prior at the same time. Do you get that same feeling?
Yes, I do. And I think it's because there's limited sellers. So the buyers are getting a little nervous. If you wait too long, you may be left out in the cold. So it will be very interesting between now and July 30th, what goes down, not so much July 28th, 29th, and 30th, but much earlier than that, possibly. Now, I'm not saying it's imminent that we're going to see a bunch of trades, but in general, I do think we might see an earlier sort of move in terms of the trade market. We already saw Luis Arraez, and there's been some relievers move, but I'm talking about more than normal in general between now and July 30th, or I should say between now and the last week of July when it normally picks up. So I think that's why you're hearing things, because there's just more conversations happening.
Does that change? I mean, yeah, like you said, the supply and demand is always going to be kind of a factor in the marketplace. Do you feel like front offices have altered their valuations on players, given that we've been waiting and waiting for free agents to sign, which pushes some big deals that might have happened in the offseason into spring training, like we saw with Dylan Cease? Like, is this a wave? Is this a push? Or is just something that's popping up this year?
No, I'll give you two words to describe the sort of transition that might be going on. Maybe three words. The Arizona Diamondbacks.
Ah.
Yeah, and what I'm getting at is people are prisoners of the moment. They saw a Diamondbacks team squeak into the postseason with 84 wins and make it to the World Series. So now the calculus by owners especially is, hey, 84, 85 might get me to the World Series. Let's do it. Let's go for it. Because, you know, as how owners think, going for it doesn't mean a $300 million payroll.
Right.
Doesn't even necessarily mean adding a ton at the deadline, just adding enough to squeak by. The conversation in baseball now is about health as much as anything. And that has emboldened teams to try to squeak in and be the healthiest team in October. part of the reason the Diamondbacks got as far as they did is the Dodgers weren't healthy on the mound. The Braves weren't healthy on the mound. So if you can get in and be healthy, you've got a shot. Let's face it, in years past, anybody that gets in has had a shot because it's baseball. But I think because of the injury situation on the mound, it's even more a chance that an underdog, a four seed, a six seed, whatever it is, can go far if they can stay healthy.
So let's talk about some of the arms that the White Sox have currently that may be enticing to teams when we get to, sounds like as early as tomorrow, but I think it'd be a little bit longer. Love to know your sense on the time frame here and also the particular constraints that it when it comes to a team trading for Garrett Crochet, as we've been hearing in rumors from your cohort, Jeff Passan, and I believe you had something on it just the other day as well. Crochet's an interesting case, right? Because he is unprecedented. We've been talking a lot about this on the show today. And in my mind, any contender that picks him up, yeah, obviously, that's a guy who can start game two as well as game one. But whether he's available for you in the same way as he is now is a question that is completely unanswerable.
Yes, and we're talking about the innings piling up as a first-time starter. But as I mentioned on one of the other shows during the week, nothing to say you can't move him to the bullpen if his innings start to creep up too much.
Mm-hmm.
Who, if you had enough starting pitching, who wouldn't want to deploy Garrett Crochet as a matchup lefty late in the game? I mean, it would be an embarrassment of riches if you could do that, if you had the luxury of doing that. So there's multiple ways to use Crochet. I think Getz will be careful. Getz/Grifol will be careful using him over the next month. I don't think he's going to be used on short rest or pushed to 120 pitches, right? But he has made every single – he leads the American League in starts. You know, I'm tied with other guys. But, like, there's nothing to say they can't give him an extra day here or there, even skip a turn. Of course, you have the All-Star break, give him a rest. So they certainly will maximize his trade value as best they can. You're not going to sit him down for weeks on end or anything like that. But remember, the little caveat is you can always use him in the bullpen if he's down to limited innings, whatever that means, whatever that trading team means. And remember, there's no guarantee he'll be traded. I talked to his agent this week. He was at Wrigley and then at the Rate as the Cubs and Sox played, then the Sox and Sox. And, you know, he's not sure either. No one's really sure. But if you want to transition to what exactly Getz's strategy is, it's not a mystery. He's made it known since basically took over the job, I am open for business. And what has been interesting about the way he's gone about it has really been impressive to opposing teams. Let's take Dylan Cease, for example. He told the world exactly what he wanted. He didn't play games. He asked for a lot. And he basically got what he wanted at the end of the day. And I think he's doing that with Luis Robert, with Garrett Crochet, with anybody on down from that list. Those are probably your two best players, pitcher and hitter right now. He is setting the market. He is telling people, I'm not really going to budge. He's not being a jerk about it. He's just being very straightforward. And I think opposing executives dealing with him for the first time are very impressed by that.
I want to stay on the pitching side of things, though that insight is really impactful, I think, especially for White Sox fans as they look to what this new regime of front office is going to, you know, try and accomplish here in the short term. On the Eric Fetty side of things, he's been nothing short of a revelation. He has been a lot of fun to watch pitch. He's been maybe the steadiest starter in the White Sox rotation. You know, Garrett Crochet being Garrett Crochet, like we've all talked about. Still, there were, you know, three starts that weren't that great. Fetty presents his own kind of challenges in trading and making sure you're getting the right price for, because he is a mid-rotation guy, many think. And I would imagine that a playoff team wants a guy that can start one, two, or three the first, second, or third game of a playoff. And if I were a team trading for Eric Fetty, I want him right now to steady the rotation as quickly as possible and know that I've got that in the pocket as opposed to necessarily a guy that's going to have to go ahead and start a playoff game for me.
Yeah, I think what you're getting at is the same way I'd analyze it. And it goes back to what I said about squeaking in, especially in the American, especially in both leagues, but especially this season where the wild card is really bunched, especially in the National League. And the point is this, even if you trade for Fetty and he's not penned in as a one, two, or three in a playoff situation, he still is very valuable to get you to the postseason. Yeah, because if you're a little bit short on the mound and you're in a wild card race where 500 is getting you in, and there's about, you know, I don't know, 10, 15 teams, it feels like, that are around 500, he could help you get in and not necessarily make a start in the playoffs. I mean, that is possible. I mean, the thing about him is he's very valuable because $15 million is not a big number. Signed for just one more. It's like trading for a guy that's going to be on a one-year deal for $15 million. You know, it's a good deal, and you get the extra 2 months out of him. One-year deal at $7.5 million.
Right. Total 15. Yeah.
I mean, even more.
Oh, no doubt.
Really attractive. 1 year and 2 months at $7.5 million plus, you know, the 2 months, you know. So whether he starts a playoff game or not, he's extremely valuable. You're not spending that much payroll on him. So, yeah, him and Crochet, very valuable, different kind of reasons. You know, Fetty, you don't have to worry about the innings. Crochet, you might, but who doesn't want a lefty like that coming out of the pen if need be? So I imagine Getz is probably going to move them, because unless you are down to – unless you have like 4 or more years of team control, I think – you are likely to be gone. And that's just my opinion. I think Getz is thinking this. If you're anywhere near free agency, like Dylan Cease was, meaning 2 or 3, even 3 years, you are likely to be gone. Now, I say likely because if he doesn't hear the right thing, you know, he could still go to the off season. Like, this is why I think fans need to understand, July is just another December. It's another time where teams talk trades. And if it doesn't get done, you could be setting something up for the following December. And if it doesn't get done in December, you're setting it up for the following July. It's just another time to talk trades. It becomes urgent for teams that are contending, not as urgent for teams that are not contending. But, of course, Getz has to weigh the drop in value as you continue on here, you know, closer to free agency, the value drops. So I think any of them are available if they're within 3 years of free agency. But doesn't mean they'll all be gone.
Well, like a radio professional, you've transitioned just right into the most interesting player on this team, in my opinion, that's on the position player side, potentially the most valuable and potentially the most tricky to talk about here, and that's Luis Robert Jr. As you know, and I'm just kind of setting it straight for White Sox fans listening in right now, the contractual obligation or control, rather, that the White Sox have over the player is through 2027 via club options. They are insanely cheap all the way through, considering the output that Robert has been able to put together, especially last year. There are injury concerns with Luis Robert Jr. He's just coming back off of a second hip flexor injury, granted not in the exact same spot, but it's the same hip flexor. And the White Sox are cautious about his playing time now as he ramps back up into full-time play. All of those things, if you are trading for Luis Robert Jr., it seems to me would depress the amount of prospects or the quality of prospects that you're willing to give up for the player. We've seen a lot of national reports about Robert, and I think what's so valuable that you bring to White Sox fans and to Cubs fans, I guess, here in this town, as you work for the ESPN 1000. You've got national perspective and local perspective, Jess. So how is Robert being looked at from the outside here?
Yeah, I mean, definitely injury prone. I mean, availability is as important as anything, as we know, right? Love the talent, all that stuff. We know how great he can be. The talent is just jumps off the screen when he is healthy. But certainly injury concerns. I think Getz, it is just very early, and this, I'm not like reporting this with sources and stuff, but I think Getz is still going to try to hit a home run. He's going to say, look, you've got 3 more years of this guy. You know, you can get him healthy. You'll figure it out. He could be an MVP if he's healthy for a full season.
Yeah.
So I think he's still going to try to hit a home run with him. I'm not convinced he'll move him because he could always move him in the offseason. But this is the toughest thing for executive. I mean, a guy that's going to trade him or for Chris Getz. The idea, like, I love the talent, but can he stay healthy? Because the talent is meaningless if you can't stay healthy. But I think Getz is going to try to hit a home run. I think he knows he needs to do that for his fan base, for his rebuilding efforts here. Because once you trade Robert, boy, we are really starting over, right? So he's going to try to get teams to look past the injury situation and you know, convince them you'll get him healthy. Don't worry. You've got 3 years to figure it out, and we'll see what happens. It's such a tough deal to be done, but you just can't give him away. Even if you think he's injury prone,
yeah,
he's on such a team-friendly deal. you've got to try to hit a home run with 3 years remaining.
Is it too early in the process? I mean, it's June 8th, so the answer is probably yes. But is it too early in the process to kind of identify or rather hear from your people what the White Sox might be targeting? Not in terms of like, what do they want for Crochet? What do they want for Robert? What are they, you know, because that's sure. impossible to do. But just like, it, you know, they picked up Drew Thorpe, and that's a guy that the Padres were ready to put in the opening day rotation. They didn't it ultimately, but they could have, right? We've all seen the results he's got down at Double A. Is there a preference toward a type of prospect, a readiness of prospect, a level of prospect, or is it too early?
Well, not for Luis Robert. I mean, in the sense that there is where you want MLB ready. I mean, maybe even MLB in Major League Baseball
sure.
ready.
Sure.
Not a guy that's in his third year, because you know you want full 6 years of control. But whether it be a Triple A player that is just being blocked, you know, Michael Busch on the Cubs is a great example. He's being blocked in LA, but clearly, and not just the Cubs, everybody thought he was at least ready to be given that chance at the Major League level.
Yeah.
Similar thing. If whoever the you know, guy playing behind Mookie Betts, if he's ready, you know what I mean? If he's ready to be in the major league, that's the sort of trade you want. That would be for Luis Robert. Now, Garrett Crochet is a little different, a first-time starter. But we can use Dylan Cease as an example. Dylan Cease netted you three top 10 prospects, one quasi-top five. You know, I think Thorpe was right on the edge of top five for the Padres. But three of them were top 10. So Cease had 2 years left. Crochet has 2.5. Cease has a, you know, finishing second in the Cy Young on his resume, but also a bad year last year. Crochet is a first-time starter. So there's a lot of pros and cons, a lot of similarities, some differences. But I think, I don't know if he's going to get three top tens for Crochet, but maybe two. Maybe two. Remember, Crochet is a lefty. He still has 2 years left. He's pitching lights out. So whether it be two top 10s or two top 15s, I don't think it matters how close they are to the major leagues in that sense. So every player is a different animal. Luis Robert has 3 years left and is a stud talent. I don't think you're trading for, you know, three teenagers that are years and years away, because that's just too much of a risk. You've got to get major league ready product or several products back for a guy like Luis Robert. But Crochet, or guys that are with less than 2 years left, smaller type deals, I think it's more about the talent than at what level they're ready. Are they Double A? Are they Triple A? I don't think that'll matter as much, if that makes all sense.
It absolutely does, Jesse. You're the man. Really appreciate the time, and enjoy the rest of your Saturday.
You too, Connor. Be well.
You got Take it. Care. Jesse Rogers, ESPN 1000 and ESPN.com. Go read his stuff. Go follow him on Twitter. And tell him he's a great guy, because he is. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. We'll close up White Sox Weekly when we come back on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. We are closing it up on White Sox Weekly. You can kick off NASCAR Chicago Street Race and join us on Sunday, June 30th for NASCAR Day, presented by Skill, for a limited time receiving number 34 White Sox Michael McDowell shirt when you purchase a specially priced ticket. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/NASCAR. An enormous thank you to Jack McGrath, our producer in the downtown Chicago studios. Huge thanks to Jesse Rogers, to Kevin Zipak, and Brennan Riley, both of them working hard to make this show happen. We've got the pregame show happening in just a few minutes. White Sox and Red Sox getting set. I'm Connor McDowell. Don't go anywhere. Baseball's on the way on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.